Good morning. It is 10:02 a.m. on Wednesday, April 11, 2018. I call this meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission, along with Commissioners Brian Krasius and Julie Fedorchak. So we have a quorum. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Krasius, do you?
I do. And Stacy, you correct me if I go astray on this, but our press release went out just a little bit earlier. The governor has proclaimed April as Safe Digging Month in North Dakota, and the press release touches on quite a number of things, but the thing to remember is spring will eventually get here. Maybe I can't promise that, but it appears that it will eventually be here. But homeowners, commercial excavators, agricultural operations have to remember that to always call 811 before digging. And it's not on the ag side. It's not for typical field work. But if drain tile is being installed, call 811 first before digging. Fencing, digging post holes, that type of activity, or deep tillage can even require calling ahead before digging. Homeowners, if you're putting in deck footings, if you're putting in a mailbox, if you're planting a tree or a shrub, which almost two out of three homeowners plan to do this coming year. Again, really important to call ahead of time. And on the commercial side, obviously, the potential damage to facilities, but also just the chances of serious injury, severe injury, or even death always exist when you're out digging and you haven't called to get the lines marked ahead of time because you don't know what is below the surface. So just wanted to touch on that. And then, Randy, you're usually the one with some facts, so I'm taking your cue today. There are over 20 million miles of underground facilities in the United States today, which is the equivalent of traveling around the Earth just over 800 times. Jeez. If you were to. They're definitely out there, and every 9 minutes in the United States today, an underground facility is hit because someone fails to call 811 ahead of time and get the lines marked. So it's serious. At the end of the day, this is really serious. We want people to be safe. We want them to go home at the end of the night when they're done working, or if they're working in the yard, to be able to have supper with the family that night. So just the typical activities. And we're working, obviously, to create awareness here at the Commission, both through the press release. We have a series of billboards that are running now in the month of April. And everything is to promote North Dakota One Call. Call before you dig. Call 811.
Thank you. Commissioner Fedorchak.
I will just add on to that real briefly, and that is to say that I sometimes think that people don't call because they think it's going to be a hassle or it's just not that big of a deal or it might slow up their project. So for those folks, I just want to reinforce that it's super easy. You call, you give them your address, they come out within a couple of days, sometimes that same day, and mark that infrastructure. You don't need to be home. It all happens without you being there. All you need to do is make the phone call. And it's free. So, and it happens really quickly. So none of those claims or concerns that it's going to slow me down, it's going to cost money, there's probably nothing there anyway. None of those are really legitimate reasons. It all can be done really quickly and easily, and it's free. So people ought to just take the extra time. Even the number is really easy to remember. So there's no excuse there either. We can all remember 811. And let's just take advantage of it and take that extra step this summer so we can really eliminate the striking of the underground facilities.
I did hear one complaint on that matter, though, regarding dialing 811 before you dig, is that some people were having trouble finding the 11 button on their phones. So. Okay, moving on.
They must have been NDSU.
Now we're just being rude. okay, so moving on to the Consent agenda. We have three items plus previous minutes. I move passage and approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, to the regular agenda, RC1, I move the commission approve revision number 10 to surface coal mining permit number ACPG-9701 held by American Colloid Company for the Page, Perkins, and Tompkins mine to identify the next five-year coal removal sub-area with the permit area and to update other information and plans in the permit.
Second.
On let me just say, because this and number two sound confusing. This is the revision. The next one is the renewal. And so if someone's not watching closely, it's going to sound like we're doing the same thing in a few minutes. You need to get a revision before you get a renewal. And so that's what we're doing here. So, and you'll get the distinction now, I think, if keeping those two things in mind. But it's for the same outfit. On December 26th of 2017, I know there was a memo went out that actually had 2018, but it's set of last year, American Colloid submitted the application for revision number 10 for its Page, Perkins, and Tompkins mine areas. Those are three different areas between Reeder and Gascoyne, North Dakota. This revision identifies the next five-year coal removal sub-area, the legal, financial, and ownership information, the groundwater monitoring plans, the adjacent surface and mineral ownership information, and mining and reclamation plans. Coal, and in this case Leonardite coal, removal is expected to continue in this permit area for several years. A surety bond issued by Arch Insurance Company currently covers the bond area. The bond currently totals $1,092,445 and is adequate at this time. This revision number 10 was deemed a significant revision, and so it was subject to the public notice requirements. They submitted affidavits of publication of the newspaper notice from the Bowman County Pioneer and the Dickinson Press, indicating that the notice was published once a week for four consecutive weeks. We also notified the appropriate agencies, the affected landowners, the advisory committee members, and no objections to this revision application were received. So the Reclamation Division has finished its review of this revision and recommends that it be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I should add one more thing. I said that Page, Perkins, and Tompkins were really separate sites. Page is done. That's as far as mining. That is in reclamation right now. The Tompkins is the new area that they really just started last fall. And the Perkins site, which, by the way, I believe is named after Cat Perkins' grandfather, was finished in late 2017 and will be in reclamation for some time to come. I wanted to point out Reeder, the little town about 4 miles away, was the home of Marvell Peterson, who was the superintendent of public instruction from 1951 to 1976. So a longtime public servant from Reeder.
Is there any further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the commission approve renewal number 4 to surface coal mining permit number ACPG-9701 held by the American Colloid Company to extend the permit term for another 5 years until April 22nd, 2023.
Second.
So again, on this past December 26th, American Colloid filed the application for this renewal number 4 to continue the mining and reclamation operations within the existing permit area for the next 5 years until April 22nd of 23. It covers 656.72 acres in portions of four sections in Bowman County. The Leonardite removal from this permit area is expected to continue for several years. Again, American Colloid submitted affidavits of publication in the newspaper notices once a week for four consecutive weeks in the Bowman County Pioneer and the Dickinson Press. We, again, notified the appropriate agencies, the affected landowners, and the advisory committee members. We received no objections to the renewal application, and evidence of liability insurance is currently on file. No changes to the worst-case reclamation cost estimate or the total surety bond amount were required at this time. So, once again, the Reclamation Division has completed its review and recommends that it be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC3, I move the Commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in One Oak Rockies Midstream, LLC, the Bear Creek Gas Plant Expansion Project in Dunn County, citing application case number PU-18-21.
Second.
We held a hearing on this on March 21st out in Kildare. A few details from the hearing. One Oak owns and operates the Bear Creek gas plant that is located about five miles north of Kildare. It's on a 76-acre parcel of land that's owned by One Oak. This is, of course, in Dunn County. One Oak now proposes to increase the wellhead gas processing capacity of the existing gas plant from 80 million standard cubic feet per day to 175 million cubic feet per day. They testified that the project may include the addition of an amine treating system, and there are a number of possible systems that could be used. The big point of that would be to separate hydrogen sulfide, which would be burned off. Depending on the type selected, they could also potentially capture CO2, but then the question would be what to do with the CO2. NGLs produced by the facility will be sold and transported by pipelines. The residue gas produced by the facility will be delivered by pipeline through the Northern Border Pipeline Company. The estimated cost of this facility when it's done, including the original facility that's there, is about $250 million. The original plant was about $140 to $150 million. This expansion, they expect, will be a little over $100 million. One Oak conducted cultural natural resource desktop surveys as well as field surveys on this site prior to the original plant's construction. They conducted a Class 1 cultural resource literature search as well as a Class 3 cultural resource inventory. Seven agencies provided comments, including the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Department of Defense, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, North Dakota Department of Trust Lands, North Dakota Game and Fish Department, North Dakota State Historic Preservation Office, and the North Dakota State Water Commission. I had written down another note here that the hydrogen sulfide is the result of microbial breakdown of organic matter. It's in natural gas. It's also produced by the human body, and in its pure form, it is poisonous, corrosive, and flammable. This site includes 3.22 acres of farmland, which is one of the things we take into consideration, but are deeming that this is such small acres to be of negligible impact. The Class 3 inventory identified three historical archaeological sites. One of the sites was not eligible for inclusion on the National Register of Historic Places. The other two sites were avoided for the project. Other than archaeological sites, surveys did not record any avoidance areas. Regarding our selection criteria, no significant adverse effects will result. They're taking some measures to minimize impact, including that they have made representations and covenants as indicated in our certificate and our certification relating to order provisions, for the tree and shrub mitigation specifications. The addition of processing capacity for the plant will minimize environmental disturbance by utilizing existing infrastructure, including access roads, utilities, gathering systems, and delivery and takeaway pipelines. All construction associated with the expansion will occur on the previous developed site. One Oak will obtain the necessary permits from the Department of Health prior to construction of those portions of the plant for which a permit is required, and I think that is primarily if they go with that amine system to capture the hydrogen sulfide. They will continue to coordinate with local authorities and emergency manners. They testified that they will perform pressure and function testing before putting new facilities into service, and that they will comply with all applicable safety laws and standards. They will utilize the North Dakota One Call system during construction, and they will work with the Dunn County folks by communicating their construction plans. So the approval of this would have us ordering that we grant a certificate of site compatibility number 55 to One Oak, designating a site for construction, operation, and maintenance of the Bear Creek gas plant.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just add a few thoughts on we're going to continue to see expansion in terms of processing capacity in the Bakken as we get through this year and even into next year and thereafter, because companies have to hit their Q4 flaring percentages, the oil exploration companies, the drilling companies, and producers. They have to hit that from a flaring standpoint, or they can't continue to put new wells in. There are a few exceptions. Wells, for example, that produce less than 100 barrels of oil a day are not factored in terms of the flaring. But this isn't being driven as much by the price of natural gas as it's being driven by two things. One, an uptick in the price of crude oil. So it works from an economic standpoint to capture the gas. But secondly, it's really about hitting those flaring percentages. This is a good thing for North Dakota because it helps expand and diversify our economic base as a result of these processing plants going in. So from a value-added standpoint, it's good for the state. And also, it leads to more infrastructure being placed, both in the oil fields themselves in terms of gathering pipeline infrastructure, to move the gas from wellhead to the plant, because it's not typically economically feasible to try and move natural gas by truck from the wellhead. That, just due to the volume, isn't feasible. So this is more about incenting development of gathering lines, and then that goes to processing plants, and then that incents more takeaway capacity in terms of transmission lines from those plants and then to final market destinations. So we're going to continue to see more of this type of development so producers can hit their flaring percentages, and when the price of natural gas eventually increases, which you often think, well, it's not going to go up, but the reality is sooner or later it's a commodity. At some point in time, whether through export markets outside of the U.S. that we're reaching with finished product, that price is going to move upward, and North Dakota will be positioned well both from an environmental and economic standpoint.
Those are good points, and I was going to add to I know I and probably all of us have talked in recent months about 5 gas plants being proposed or under construction here within the next year, probably. And they're in various stages of either seeking a certificate from us or awaiting construction that they had already had that certificate. And some of these are new builds, and some are expansions of existing projects that brought them over the siting requirement. But this is the fifth one now, and with this approval, all five will have siting approval from us, and it's a matter of them getting their people out there and getting to work and getting these things going. So it's a major, major increase in North Dakota's gas processing capabilities, which is, as Brian was talking about, going to take trucks off the road, reduce flaring, and enhance the value of our gas production.
Yep, it represents over $1 billion. Those projects represent over $1 billion in economic development in the state. But as always, they have to do it right.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
In RC4, I move the commission issue second reissued certificate of site compatibility number 38 to Endeavor Field Services LLC, formerly known as QEP Field Services LLC, in Endeavor Field Services LLC / QEP Field Services LLC name change. Site certificate number 38, siting application case number PU-18-103.
Second.
This is basically a name change and to keep our certificate right. But for a little history, this gas plant was cited with case number PU-13-835, approved May 28th of 2014 for Whiting Oil and Gas. And it was for the Robinson Lake Gas Plant, which is a 110 million cubic feet per day plant on 35 acres in Montreal County. Subsequent to that, we had a name change when the project was acquired by QEP Field Services from Whiting Oil and Gas. And that was really an acquisition by a different company. This is more of just a name change going from QEP Field Services to Endeavor Field Services. But that is the plant that we're really talking about.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Crashes.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the commission adopt the order in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group Incorporated, Generation Resource Cost Recovery, Tariff and Rates, case number PU-17-469, and Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group Incorporated, Renewable Resource Cost Adjustment, Tariff and Rates, case number PU-18-82.
Second. Second.
On November 27th, 2017, in case number PU-17-469, Montana Dakota Utilities Company filed for an approval of a change to the tariff language and an annual update, rate update to its generation resource cost recovery rider. On December 20th, 2017, the commission did issue a notice of opportunity for hearing that provided until February 3rd of this year, 2018, for receiving written comments and hearing requests. No comments or requests for the hearing were filed. On February 23rd, rather, 2018, in case number PU-17-469, MDU filed for approval of an update to reduce its generation resource the generation resource recovery rider, and that was due to the effects of the Federal Tax Cuts and Job Act of 2017. Then also on February 23rd, in case number PU-18-82, MDU filed for an update to its renewable resource cost adjustment rate. The update includes adjustments related also to the Federal Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017, and that ties to the Thunder Spirit, Cedar Hills, and Diamond Willow wind projects. On March 14, 2018, the Commission issued a Notice of Opportunity for Hearing in both the caption cases, allowing until April 6, 2018, for comments or requests for hearing. No comments or requests for hearing were filed. So really what this boils down to is for the generation resource cost recovery rider, for a typical residential customer using 894 kilowatt hours per month without electric space heating, it would decrease their bill by approximately 30 cents a month based on a series of calculations that advocacy staff worked through. On the renewable resource cost adjustment rider, the impact for a similar customer, again, 894 kilowatt hours per month of usage without electric space heating, is a decrease of 31 cents a month. So combined, that is a total of 61 cents a month that customer bills will be going down by for an average, again, residential customer. And again, both of these are tied to Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017, and staff has reviewed the numbers. They are in agreement, and they, as always, do very good work on the analysis. So I am putting forth the order to approve the change in rates for both the generation resource cost recovery rate and the renewable resource cost adjustment rate.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Just a second. I move the Commission adopt the order and Public Service Commission, Xcel Energy Services Incorporated, Pipeline Safety Enforcement, case number GS-18-35.
Second.
During an October 23rd through the 27th audit this past year in 2017, staff identified five probable violations of pipeline safety regulations. And I'll go through those. The probable violation number one alleges that Xcel did not perform the required CRM plan review once each calendar year, but at intervals not to exceed 15 months. Probable violation number one has a proposed civil penalty of $1,000. Probable violation number two alleges that Xcel did not perform the required alarm management plan review once each calendar year, again, but not at intervals to exceed 15 months. That violation has a proposed civil penalty of $1,000. Probable violation number three alleges that Xcel did not perform the required analysis of controller workload at least once each calendar year, but not at intervals to, again, exceed 15 months. That has a proposed civil penalty of $1,000. Probable violation number four alleges that Xcel did not perform a review of the controller training program, again, at least, that is supposed to occur at least once each calendar year, but at intervals not to exceed 15 months. That also has a proposed civil penalty of $1,000. And probable violation number five alleges that Xcel did not provide fatigue mitigation training for all CRM controllers annually as required by Xcel's CRM plan. So that was a training issue. The first two were getting the reviews done within the time that they are allotted to do those reviews. So one was a training issue, and the other four related to timing. But that the fifth probable violation has a proposed civil penalty of $5,000. In its March 5th, 2018 response, Xcel does not contest the allegations of probable violations. Xcel did not submit a written explanation, information, or other materials it believes may warrant mitigation or elimination of the proposed penalty, proposed civil penalty. And in effect, Excel, or not in effect, Excel agrees to the fine amount, a total of $9,000. It admits, has admitted to the probable violations and has authorized the commission to make a finding of violations and issue an order. So $9,000. These are really important. We talk about pipeline safety, and this is related to natural gas lines. But when we're talking about pipeline safety, we're often talking about a line strike because that's what comes to mind. But really, safety starts not just in the control room, but frankly, safety starts with planning and construction of a line before it even goes in the ground, proper planning, proper construction. So these are all really important pieces that tie together and enhance public safety at the end of the day. And two other quick points. Training is underway, and review for the four items, the violations related to not doing the review in a timely fashion within the allotted time, that has been performed. So training is underway for the controllers, the fatigue mitigation training, as mentioned earlier.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I just want to emphasize, you know, I appreciate Excel's stepping up here and recognizing that there were some infractions made and that they just are going to pay it and hopefully learn and take the opportunity to retrain their folks and reemphasize the importance of these following these procedures. These seem like kind of minor infractions, but the natural gas system is something that leads up to every customer's doorstep. And so it's really vital that the system is operated and maintained safely, and all of the safety precautions are followed every step of the way because it is a total system that needs to be functioning appropriately. And so I think this is an example of our inspectors being out there looking out for the public, looking out for the safety, and making sure that the companies are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And so I really applaud the work of our safety inspectors in this and all of our inspections, and think it really does make a difference in keeping these systems at their best.
Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, I just want to throw something out, and you know, I'm probably more conscious of rates by regulated utilities and what kinds of things they're able to get recovery from their customers on and what kind of things they're not now than I've ever been, because we have three rate cases going with regulated utilities right now. This isn't one of them, and I want to emphasize that. But when I read through this settlement agreement and the fact that they really didn't present information on it, just agreed to the settlement and moving on, in the future, as I go through rate cases, I'm going to be watching. I do not expect that this is something that they just recover from the customers and that the customers end up paying for the settlement. The customers need to pay for the cost of operating their system safely and reliably, but not penalties for when they fail to do so. Mm-hmm. And so, to the many customers that Excel has, I suppose over a long period of time, $9,000 is not a big amount, but it's an important amount. And these kinds of settlement agreements need to not be coming out of the ratepayers' share of the costs.
No, and you know, and again, to echo Commissioner Fedorchak's thoughts, I think the company did a good job stepping up and quickly getting back on track with the review process and getting the training aspect rolling as well. So my understanding, talking to staff, that the company was responsive. So appreciate that.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing Montana Dakota Utilities Company, Great Plains Natural Gas Company, holding company structure application, case number PU-18-75.
Second.
On January 31st, 2018, Montana Dakota Utilities Company and Great Plains Natural Gas filed an application to implement a plan of reorganization through which Montana Dakota and Great Plains currently operating divisions of MDU Resources Group Incorporated will become a wholly owned subsidiary of a newly formed holding company. The applicants contend that the new holding company will increase the degree of financial separation between MDU Resources and its other regulated and non-regulated affiliates and reduce financial and legal risk. Secondly, not alter the Commission's ability to effectively regulate the utility operations. Third, continue to provide safe and reliable electric and natural gas service to customers. The fourth point they are making, it will create a more transparent business structure that is more understandable to stakeholders and customers. It will offer flexibility for the public utility business to separately access capital markets, not result in employment changes, and not result in changes to currently effective electric and natural gas service rates. The issues to be considered in this case are whether the holding company structure is in the public's best interest. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceedings and reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by May 31st, 2018. And I would just add that the points that the company is making and contends that this will accomplish are all very important. And as we go through the process and the hearing itself, to take a real hard look and to ensure that this is, in fact, going to be in the public's best interest. So that, for me, is a very, very important issue in all of this, but also from a business standpoint, from my prior life, if you will, I understand the need to be clear when you're trying to attract capital to continue to operate efficiently. Capital is important for any business, being able to attract capital, and also at the end of the day to make sure that they're continuing to provide safe and reliable electric service at the rates that they have been, at the approved rates that the commission has put forth. So I look forward to hearing more about this, but one final point is that this is not being driven by a dispute in terms of cost recovery. This is something that any company has that we regulate has the opportunity to bring forth to the commission, and then we can take a look at it and make a decision from there.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? And seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement and public service commission, Red Lake Builders Incorporated, damage prevention enforcement, case number PU-18-78.
Second.
On February 7th, 2018, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Polar Communications, alleging a violation by Red Lake Builders Incorporated of North Dakota Century Code section 49-23, the one-call excavation notice system. On February 9th, 2018, the commission sent a letter to Red Lake Builders enclosing the North Dakota one-call complaint. On February 26th, the company responded to the North Dakota one-call complaint, and on March 29th, 2018, the Public Service Commission advocacy staff and Red Lake Builders filed a consent agreement for the resolution of the complaint. And what this really amounts to, well, first of all, it did result in an estimated $1,581.12 in damage to a four-fiber optic telecommunications cable affecting service to one customer near Pembina, North Dakota. And they were actually doing some work on the levee that would be protecting Pembina, is my understanding. And really, it amounts to an expired ticket. They had originally gotten the ticket on April 28th, 2015, and the damage occurred on July 10th, 2015. So about 10 or 11 weeks after the ticket, approximately 10 weeks after the ticket was issued, the damage occurred. The ticket was good for a period of 21 days from the date it was issued, so it had been long expired. And that's just really important because you do have to get the lines remarked. If the ticket expires, you're going to have to call in and get a new ticket to make sure that the lines are properly marked, that flags haven't disappeared over the course of time, someone hasn't picked them up. You know, maybe they're mowing and they're in the way, they pull them. So, and you don't know as an excavator if you wait. So really important to make sure that when tickets do expire that you put in for a new one. And the fine in this particular case is $500. And it's worth noting that this is the first violation that we have on record for Red Lake Builders. And again, it goes back to an expired ticket, and then, in fact, they did cause some damage.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, and this is my last one. I move the commission reduce the filing fee from $175,000 to $10,000. And issue a notice of opportunity for hearing the Northern States Power Company Electric Reliability Performance Plan rates, case number PU-18-112.
Second.
On December 12th, 2012, so it dates back to 2012, the Commission adopted an order on settlement that issued a reliability performance plan for Northern States Power Company for reducing electric outages. That was case just for reducing electric outages. Then in case number PU-10-657, so going back to 2010 and in 2011, on cases PU-11-55 and 11-557, that's what this ties back to. So this has been in place for quite some time. The reliability performance plan provided a financial award ranging between $250,000 and $1.5 million for achieving an electric service reliability threshold. And on March 7th, 2018, NSP requested that the commission approve a financial award of $1.5 million for achieving the reliability threshold in 2017. The issue is to determine whether the financial award that the company is requesting is just and reasonable. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by May 25th, 2018. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and reasons for requesting a hearing. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine these matters without a hearing, and you can any individual requesting desiring a hearing can contact the Public Service Commission at 701-328-2400. And I just want to make some points. I had indicated that this dates back to 2010 and then also 2011, as well as activity in 2012. This would, if anything were granted, and it would be determined on whether or not they have in fact achieved the electric service reliability threshold, it would result in a one-time charge to customers. There are some other moving parts to this, but just fundamentally for me, I'll admit when this came across my desk and I saw it for the first time, I was surprised from the sense that reliable electric service is, in fact, a fundamental expectation that I think every consumer in North Dakota would be reasonable to expect that would occur. So I had to do quite a bit of backtracking and whatnot, and of course there are two parts to this. One, we have to determine as a commission would have to agree that they have in fact met these standards. But to me, good service is just something that should occur, and it shouldn't be tied to a financial award. But this does date back to 2010, 11, and 12, so it dates back quite a ways. And I'll personally take a very hard look at this, and it's one of those things that has been lingering, but on the books, if you will, for quite a period of time. But I think it's safe to say I'm not terribly excited about just how this is framed up, but willing to keep an open mind as we go through the process.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Well, yeah, Brian makes a good point in that this agreement was made before any of us were even on the commission. But that said, it is the agreement, and we're obligated to uphold it. And I also agree that I have some questions about the calculation and the some of the measurements for achieving this. It was a tough threshold, and they narrowly missed it last year. And the company has made significant improvements and significant investments in reliability, in particularly in the Fargo-Moorhead or Fargo area. And so, this was their incentive for really doubling down and focusing on that when there was a lot more problems than what we're seeing now at the commission. So I applaud their improvement. I think the customers in Fargo are seeing the results of that. I also appreciate that they've offered a couple different recovery mechanisms if this is, in fact, agreed that they achieved the threshold, that they offered a couple different options for how that financial reward could be used, one of which was reinvestments in reliability measures. And so I appreciate those two things as well. But I have questions about the way you calculate the major event days. So those are certain things that get thrown out of the calculation for the amount of minutes that our customers out of service. And so I agree with the weather being something that's out of the company's control. But some of the other things that just seem a little bit more could be rooted in the company's system and its management of it. I'm not sure I agree that those should be thrown out, but I look forward to at least an informal. I'm hoping you plan on getting one of those organized so we can visit with the company about this in more detail and come up with a fair resolution, because you know they've worked hard at this effort, and it's something we've pushed them hard on, and we'll have to come to some form of agreement on keeping the terms that were established.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, I think that concludes our work on our regular agenda. We will stand in recess. No, I have a couple announcements first before we do that. Our next regular commission meeting is right on a normal schedule on Wednesday, April 25th at 10 a.m. But in between now and then, tomorrow, April 12th at 9 a.m., we have a formal hearing on case number PU-17-483. That is a One Oak project called the Cherry Creek Pipeline that traverses McKenzie and Williams counties. It will be held in Williston at the Ernie French Center. Again, that's tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. With that, we will stand in recess. During recess, we'll take some questions from the press, followed by a very brief break, and then reconvene for the administrative portion of our meeting.
Following up on BK5, is there also a rider that if they slip back to where they were, where there were outages, they might have to pay some of the money back? Or what do you know about that?
Well, there's also a piece in the last settlement, or it's been a continuation, that on the outage portion, if they have more than three outages, or a customer experiences more than three outages that are within the company's control within a 12-month period, they receive $50. This, it all ties back to reliability, but this is more about achieving. This is in a little different spot. It's about achieving and hitting a threshold that's been established in terms of reliability, and that's what we will be reviewing if, in fact, they've hit that threshold, been able to achieve that threshold. And if they have, then what the amount would be within the stated range.
I think this plan expires or has expired at the end of 2017. I believe it was extended for one more year. So I don't think there is an incentive or a stick after continuing forward for reliability and performance.
Now, eventually, though, the consumer is going to pay something on this for them to get the $175,000 to $1 million, right? It's going to be $250,000 to $1 million.
Well, the range is between $250,000 and $1.5 million, but it's contingent on whether or not they've, in fact, achieved the reliability threshold,
right?
But if the target.
But if you determine they had, customers will have to pay something.
It's possible that they would have to pay something unless there was a through the settlement process. If we got to the point of there could be a different element in terms of part of the negotiation, through the settlement process. But
so
have to kind of dodge around that there. I can't say emphatically yes that it's going to hit the customer's bill, because you don't know for sure if, again, through the settlement process, if something else is presented and considered.
In their filing, so if you mean like a line item on a bill or an increase, that's one potential way. But there's also, the company proposed that there's funds that customers have been reimbursed from this nuclear, that whole nuclear project that was collected for and now hasn't come to fruition. So there's refunds there that the customers have been getting. The company proposed that those refunds go towards this, so there wouldn't be a line item on their bill. They've also proposed that the money could just be reinvested in reliability measures, say more of those intelligent transformers and some of those things invested in that area. In which case, the customer would not see a line item on their bill either, or increasing the replacement of the cable or any tree trimming, any number of measures that would continue to help support improved reliability. So those are two options that the company suggested, in different from a line item on a bill.
On BK2, that pipeline, approximately where is that? And
the pipeline for 2 is this is the network. This is the control room monitors the network, and so in effect, the system that Xcel uses to distribute natural gas to its customer base.
So it's not just one, it's the whole network then.
Okay. Yeah.
Commissioner Christman, on when does One Oak hope to get started on the expansion plan project? Do you have a date, or did they give you a date?
It was delayed. I'm thinking of two different. Can I get back? I think it's the third quarter, August. Okay, so third quarter, August of this summer.
August of the summer. Okay. And in terms, I have to ask, and I always ask, is Leonardite used for?
It can be used for a variety of things. I think that the main thing it's used for at this point and from this location is they mix it like with urea and apply it to the soil, and somehow or another it helps things blend in, helps the fertilizer blend in with the soil. And I don't think it would be technically called a fertilizer, but it's a additive for crop production in certain types of soils.
pH related.
It's got humic and fulvic acid, which is for plant nutrients. It also conditions the soil, and it's also used as a drilling mud additive.
Right.
So it's used in the Bakken.
Okay. How much Leonardite do we produce in North Dakota? Do you know?
That I don't recall.
About 80, in a good year, 80,000 tons is mined, and probably a poor year, 40,000.
Okay. How many mines do we have?
Well, there's a mine up in Williston.
Two.
And there's also the mine at Reeder. It's mm-hmm. three mines, one's in three. Reclamation, one's being reclaimed, and one is a new mine.
Okay.
But all with American colloid, so it's, I think people kind of associate those three together.
The world of Leonardite.
I have some Leonardite in my office if you'd like to see it.
I actually have seen it.
Okay.
Remember Dean Winkler?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Leonardite.
During really?
The legislative session, yes.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Leonard Hall or you and me?
Really? Is that associated with Leonardite?
Well, I think it was named after, he kind of named it. So
oh.
Leonardite. Cool.
Neat.
What's Leonard Hall? What?
It's a building at UND.
Yeah. Well, but like, is it a dorm or a class?
Geology
building.
Geological
Hmm. I actually had some earth science classes in that back in the late 1970s.
Yeah, it sounds sort of familiar. Well, actually, it sounds incredibly familiar. I was always there.
You had to wait a whole hour, Bruce. You got anything else for us? This is good stuff.
How is it mined? Is it the same way?
Yeah, they just dig it out of the ground. They strip the topsoil and the soil, and they can excavate and dig out the overburden, and then they just load it up in a truck and send it off to the plant to pulverize it and dry it.
Is it deeper than regular lignite, or is it about the same layer? Deeper?
No, it's about 10 to 20 feet down. It's oxidized lignite, and it's also formed in a saltwater environment, I believe.
Mm.
Way back.
Interesting.
I wonder if it could be used as a road stabilizer.
It's a what stabilizer?
Road stabilizer.
Oh, right.
Okay. We'll take a little break here, and let's reconvene about 5 after 11.